Welcome to this new edition of Dognostics Podcast, where two ladies and a couple of dogs all hang out and geek out regarding dogs, dog behavior, pet care, and anything else pet professional. Hi, good morning. This is Nikki Touch, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Louise Stapleton-Frappell, the dogsmith of Estepona, dialing in from the Spanish the Riviera. I've got France on the brain because I was watching the PSG game yesterday. So I've got...
Definitely not in France.
Yeah, absolutely. No. Welcome. How are you?
Southern Spain. I'm good. Yeah, it's actually, I'm going to say you said good morning. I bet it's nearly afternoon with you as well.
It's 11:33. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We're now sort of heading towards the evening time. But right. Yeah, cool. Up for some good discussion.
Absolutely. So I wanted to talk today about enrichment, a topic that's very near and dear to our hearts because we spent so much time building our canine enrichment certification program. But for those that are not interested in the program, we did want to sort of propagate some good education. So I'm going to start by just first of all saying that it was a couple of years ago, I was on a Facebook Live with Judy Luther, who's the chair of the PPG Canine Committee. And Judy and I were talking about some of the things that we do with our dogs. And Judy said to me out of the blue, she said, wouldn't it be nice if we could get some education out to professionals about enrichment? And I sort of went, And she looked at me and she said, what are you concocting? And I said, I can't believe you said that, because at the back of my mind, I was going, oh my goodness, we need to rethink how in our industry we care for people's dogs and cats. Rather than having dog walkers, pet sitters that go into a home and feed and water and exercise and do a general sort of physical well-being check to make sure the animal's healthy, why can't we provide the skills for pet professionals so that when they are doing pet sitting 30 minute lunch or dinner breaks or looking after someone's animal, why can't that 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 1 hour, whatever that service period is, why can't it be so much more focused on enrichment and welfare and not just run in, check the house, make sure the animal's eaten. Is the animal still here? Have I still got three cats? I started off with three cats. Are there still three cats? Why can't it be about so much more? And I threw the idea by you and we sort of pondered it for a while and we were both busy doing other things. And then late last year, we decided to get it done and we got it done and it's flown off the shelves. I think people just love the idea because it is a complete program, isn't it? I mean, it gives everything that somebody needs.
Absolutely. And I think you sort of summed it up by saying it gives much more than, you know, somebody simply going into a pet's home and maybe if the pet's lucky, taking it out for a walk.
Yeah.
It includes so much more than that.
Right.
But even actually, if it only is taking the dog for a walk, there's so much information in the programs about how you can take a dog for a walk. You don't just have to walk out with the dog. So, you know, I love that we can sort of say, okay, well, we can go out for a sniffari. We can go out and just sit and watch the world go by. Right. I actually had a client come back to me last week, Nikki, and she'd been doing, she got, and I'm going to say a very aroused, very excitable young, let's say juvenile dog, mm-hmm. 8 months old. And by excitable, I mean extremely excitable whenever it saw anything, just literally couldn't control itself. And I went through one of the canine enrichment games, which was literally, you know, you're going out and you're sitting and watching the world go by. And she's come back to me a week later and actually with the dog. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, what have you been doing?
Yeah.
It's a different dog.
Yeah.
And she said, I can't believe. She said, I've been trying to run with my dog and bike with my dog and do all these things with my dog. She said, and that one activity mm-hmm. that you've given me out of the canine enrichment, mm-hmm. she said, and this is the result. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think absolutely fantastic program.
And let me just read out, before we go on, let me just read out what sort of a couple of definitions of enrichment.
Yeah, so, good idea.
Yeah, so the first one is from the National Zoo. And it says, enrichment allows animals to demonstrate their species-typical behavior gives them opportunity to exercise control or choice over their environment. So there's that whole empowerment section, and enhances their well-being. Enrichment is just as essential to animal welfare as proper nutrition and veterinary care, which I just love. Because how many pets do we know of, or do we anticipate there are out there that are getting wellness checks and they're getting good nutrition? And I'm going to say specifically some of the smaller dogs that never get outside their four walls. They just live in these, and they are captive animals. And when we were looking at this program, and I was doing some research into domestication, the process, and captive animals, I suddenly had this massive light bulb moment where I went, my God, I was looking at my dogs going, these poor animals are captive. And I don't like zoos in general. I'm not a fan of zoos, having lived in Africa for many years and had wild animals walloping through my front yard. I recognize they're essential for certain things, but, and they do a better job now than they used to, but I've never been a fan of captive animals. So when I sort of looked at my own dogs and thought, my God, they're captive. That for me really resonated. And I thought, my God, we have got to do a better job of enriching our dogs' environments. And I'm just going to give one little example here, because when you look at the, in our program, we have seven different types of enrichment. There's two active and five passive. And when you look at all the exercises that we give people in each of those categories, and you think my dogs might do some auditory enrichment in the morning, have some visual, have some physical, do some agility, maybe go for a walk, maybe we'll do some sniffing. That means that in a day, they're being exposed to five or six different types of enrichment, which I believe is the way it should be. Now, some people have dogs and they'll say, well, my dog's an agility dog. It does agility every day. Well, I'm a runner and I run every day, but that doesn't mean I don't want to do other things, or I shouldn't be doing other things as well. So this is a really long-winded way for me to say this one sentence, that it doesn't matter what your dog's already doing already. There is still so much that you can add to it in terms of variety of enrichment to make sure that we're tapping into all those species typical behaviors.
Yeah, definitely. And I think actually, Nikki, that sort of comes back round as well to what I was saying about this lady that was doing a great job of doing so many different things with her dog, so many different activities. But there was just another style of enrichment that was missing. And that actually helped complete the puzzle for that particular dog.
Absolutely. And in that case, that was the appropriate enrichment. So I'll give you another little example. When Doogie was a puppy and she had that witching hour, every night at 7 o'clock, I'd take her outside and do agility with her and throw balls for her, thinking if I can only wear her out, I will get a few hours peace in the evening. And all I was doing was making the situation worse. And I'm a professional dog trainer. And then one day I sat back and I said, why am I taking my puppy outside and getting her completely jazzed up at the time of day when I want her to learn how to relax? So I then switched to doing very quiet, low-key scent games at night. And after only doing two or three different little scent fun searches, she was pooped out. And I thought, oh, this is the biscuit. This is the way to go.
And I think that's a really good point there as well, Nikki, because it's amazing what we can do with our dogs that will tire them mentally as well as perhaps physically. But we're doing our dogs a disservice if we think it's a good idea that we just take them out twice a day and walk as quickly as, or run with them or whatever, and that's it, that's their enrichment or their exercise. That is, it's like you said, if all you did was get up and go and have one run and then that was it for the rest of the day, you were just if I put you in your office and said, well, no, that's it, you're not even getting your laptop or anything. You're not doing anything else.
However much I love that one activity, it's not enough to give me to really sort of look after my emotional and physical welfare.
Absolutely not. And it will tire you in one way, but it certainly won't tire you in another way. It will meet some needs, but it doesn't meet all of your needs. And I'm also going to say that because we included so many different enrichment activities, I believe like there was something like 30 something enrichment games. I think there was
32 in total.
Okay.
Yeah, 32.
There's, you know, you can keep rotating what you're doing, but also you can match it for the individual dog. If you've got a dog that is missing something in particular, you know, there is going to be something there. So I'm going to ask you actually to throw me an example. So let's say I gave an example of a dog that was actually over aroused and doing lots of exciting things, and you sort of gave me that example as well with Doogie. So what games, you mentioned sniffing, what games did you actually play that helped her just relax?
Honestly, just some really, really simple small search behaviours. And because Doogie does have several scents, I can do food, I can work on
What do you mean by she has several scents?
She can search
for somebody that doesn't understand.
Yeah. She's not just, she can't just search food. She can search specific individual scents. So she's
okay. So you've actually taught her to find different scents. Okay.
So, and I was very lucky because I had a 2,000 square foot training room at the time. But since we moved here, what I do now in the evenings, like today's a really good example, because this morning I couldn't take her on my run because it was already 90% humidity and 85 degrees at 7:30 in the morning. And that would have, that would not have been fun. So what I will do here today is two or three times during the day, I will just lay out some fun searches for her. And I might take them outside depending on the weather. But for my dog, I find that food searches or scenting, I only have to spend 10 minutes with her and it exhausts her, absolutely exhausts her.
Yeah, I actually read, and I couldn't give you a source of this information because I'm going back a couple of years, but I do remember reading that it was something like 10 minutes of scent work was the equivalent to hiking for sort of 40 minutes in the in the countryside or something like that. I would have to sort of check exactly, but so what sort of games like would you play with her? If you were playing, you said you could do it in a limited area. So if somebody had got a limited space, let's say they're in an apartment, could they still play scent games?
Absolutely. I mean, in my house, what I will do is I will put her in her, I have a dressing room and I put her in there because I have a dog gate on there, and I will put her in there, and then I will go and hide a scent somewhere in the house. And then I'll walk around the whole house and touch everything, because otherwise they're not finding the scent. They're actually tracking where you've been. And I learned that really quickly, because I'd be like, how does she find that so quickly? And then she just went my exact trail. And then I would just say, go find. And she will just be like bombing all over the house looking for it. And then she'll also, but when she finds it, she'll alert to it. So I can do, depending on how far those searches are and how difficult, how high they are, I can do three or four of those. Now, she will want to do more, but if I do three or four, it absolutely takes the edge off her. Absolutely.
And what a great thing. Like she's moving around, but she's using her nose. Both mentally and physically sort of stimulating.
One of the reasons why I really enjoy the enrichment is I'm not in many Facebook groups, and I was in a Facebook group a couple of days ago, and somebody posted, my dog's 13 and there's very little enrichment I can do other than snuffle mats and Kongs and food because my dog doesn't walk very far, blah blah blah. And I remember Kathy Seydow coming down to our place in Florida and doing her grey muzzle workshop with Laurie Stevens. And I remember Kathy talking about, and we've incorporated this into some of our enrichment activities, is if you have a really old dog that can no longer go for walks, but everything else about its life is good, what about popping it in the car, driving it down to its favorite park or beach, and just watching the world go by? Or when you get there, hand feeding it its dinner there, so it can take in all the environment, the auditory, the olfactory, all the different scents. I mean, that is really enriching. So there are, even if you've got an older dog that physically can't do a lot of things, there are still so many ways that you can enrich its life. I mean, some dogs just love going out for a drive in the car with the window a little bit open so that they get all those smells coming into the car.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I have a little dog, Gizmo, who's 12, who The other day I went out to the front of our property. There's half an acre at the front that I just bush hogged, and I took her out there. She doesn't run off, she's tiny. And I just sat and watched her for half an hour, just sniffing around, because all the dogs that walk past our house all, like, you know, go in there and pee and mark. And I just thought, my God, I need to do this more often. That is really enriching for her. So there's so many things you can do even with older dogs. It doesn't have to be
definitely toys. And exactly the opposite of that. There's also so much thing that you could do with young dogs. You know, the information is out there now about the importance of positive socialization. Mm-hmm. So even before, you know, your puppy's vaccinations are done, you can be out there doing some of these activities. We can do it in a safe way. You don't need to be, you don't want to be going to a dog park, but you don't need to be going to an area that's frequented by lots of dogs, etc. Yeah. Your puppy can actually be staying safely in your car if you need to, and you can do some of these activities, whether it's the interactive feeding toys, or whether it's watching the world go by, or whether it's conditioning positive responses, just like to the sights and sounds of people perhaps moving trolleys or pushing prams, or walking with canes, or whatever. It could be outside a supermarket, it could be in the countryside, it can be in the middle of town. There are so many activities for dogs of literally of every age group.
Absolutely. I have, in part of our introduction to this program, I quote Dr. Eduardo Fernandez, who, as you know, I love his work. I just love the way his brain works and some of the things he says. And in the same way that a lot of people talk about, well, that was reinforcing for the dog, without actually saying, well, was it reinforcing? Did it have the desired effect? Was the behavior strengthened? Dr. Fernandez says, and I'm going to read this because I think it's actually quite important. So first of all, he quotes Fernandez and Timberlake, Hoy, Murray and Tribe, Maple and Perdue, Markowitz and Shepherdson and Young, all who've done academic papers on enrichment. And he says, an environmental enrichment can be defined as stimuli and or procedures that are added to or modify an animal's environment and result in some measurable improvement in the behavioral and physiological well-being. So either welfare or wellness of an animal. Now, here's the part I really like. As virtually all enrichment definitions require, there has to be an effect for something to be described as enriching. So you can't just say, I've enriched my dog today because I did this. Because if there wasn't an effect, if there wasn't a contingency, then it wasn't enriching. So the effect should be empirical. Enrichment is a contingency, not a stimulus or event. It can be defined the same as reinforcement, a functional interaction between an environment, stimulus, event, and some response. So basically, enrichment is very much an interaction, not a stimulus. It's empirical, not anecdotal, and it's welfare oriented, not linear. In other words, as per Dr. Eduardo Fernandez, what most people are calling enrichment is more of an enrichment hypothesis. And enrichment hypotheses are just data sets waiting to be collected and tested. So I love that, because it's not just about, well, today I did A, B, and C, therefore I'm really good and my dog's been enriched. If there wasn't an enrichment contingency, if there wasn't a relationship. So I think, like using reinforcement, it's not defined by us, it's defined by the dog.
Yeah.
So, and it's one of the reasons why in our program, at the very end of it, we provide these really nice assessment forms for the dog, the owner, and the home, so that you can assess what's going on right now. You can assess the needs of the animal. You can assess the realities of the pet owner. You can assess how the home is functioning in that environment, and then make recommendations that are empirical enrichment and not just an enrichment hypothesis.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing about that is that you go back the week after or the week after, and you can then see, has enrichment, a bit like, you know, you said reinforcement, has the enrichment actually occurred?
Right.
And I think it's usually very evident when it has. And it's not just the fact that you've got things, you know, interactive feeding toys, etc. You actually witness a change in the actual animal. You witness a change, believe it or not, in the human in the household as well. Mm-hmm. And you witness a change in the relationship. Everything comes together.
Yeah.
And it can be like it's amazing to see, to be honest. It makes you feel so good when you see what these sometimes very small changes can make. I think, as you said, the fact that we've got the forms that can be completed that collect the data, it means that when one of the enrichment technicians are starting out with a new client, they've got these intake forms, they've got the information, they can obviously build on that information as they go, but they've got a good starting point. And so each program is individualized around that client's needs, around that particular dog's needs. And even within the same household, it's like you mentioned, you know, your two dogs, you mentioned two different activities. Just because they live in your household doesn't mean that they've got exactly the same needs.
And I have to tell you, I mean, was it Suzanne Clothier who did a webinar on the importance of management and how it's underrated sometimes? I've always been a massive fan of management, because for many clients, they don't have the resilience, or they don't want to financially or time-wise go through a massive behavior change program. But in many ways, management solves so many things, doesn't it? And I think the same of enrichment. I think we've got to stop thinking of enrichment being something very separate. I think we have to think about it as sometimes an alternative. And what do I mean by that? Because when I was talking to Michelle Mariatti and Mary Richards last night about this, we were actually talking about, we had a meeting about equine enrichment. And one of the things that we were saying is, we were laughing about a video Michelle had put on Facebook with this really cute little puppy that was just zooming all over the place. And we were talking about the fact that I have, when people come to my home, they're always, oh, your dogs are so well behaved, you must do a lot of training. And I go, no, I don't actually do that much training with them. I just meet their needs. I make sure that they're getting enough physical exercise, enough mental enrichment, that they are, I managed when they were, did a lot of management when they were puppies to prevent problem behaviors occurring. So because I did a lot of management when they were puppies and prevented the development of problem behaviors, and now I provide a lot of enrichment for them, I don't have to spend hours training. And the behaviors that I do train are not the sort of perfunctory obedience manners. They're about really appropriate pet dog skills, which is my passion, so that animals can live in the home and live in the home happily with the owners. So my dogs don't door dash, they don't jump on counters, they don't chew furniture, they don't steal remote controls. But other than that, it's game on. They can do whatever they want, as long as they're not doing anything that is damaging the physical home or the relationship. And one of the things I love about our canine enrichment program is that I honestly believe that just by going into some homes and looking at management and enrichment, you can solve so many problems. How many problem behaviors do we see because dogs are not enriched and they lead boring, miserable lives, and therefore they create their own enrichment?
No, absolutely. Well, if you think about it, everything from, you know, the interactive feeding toys to whether it's fun scent games or going for a sniffari, all of these different things, they are management strategies in a way. We give them a different name. It's amazing what a difference providing sufficient mental and physical enrichment will do. And I personally believe that, you know, it should be a mixture of things, which is, you know, why we have got a little aspect of training in there. For example, walking nicely on leash. If your dog can't walk nicely on leash, you can't get them out and about. So there are some training skills wrapped in. I'm glad you mentioned pet dog manners, behaviors. Like, you know me anyway, I've never done obedience training. It's always been manners training, because that's what I think it's about. Your dog living happily and having nice manners. You know, I sort of think about it like the way that I was brought up. I wasn't brought up to be sort of obedient. I was brought up to have hopefully reasonably nice manners. Yeah, I try to say please and thank you.
And I remember my parents always said to us, every weekend we would go out for a formal dinner, and my parents always said that we're able to do this because you're well behaved, you know how to behave. So some of the behaviors that we might demonstrate around our family dining room table, where we might squabble or argue, we certainly wouldn't do that in a restaurant, because we would have literally, we would have been taken home really quickly.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. Right. So because we had good manners, our lives were so much more enriching because we were able to go out and do things and my parents would take us more places, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, it is. It's very similar to our pet dogs, isn't it? When they can walk nicely on a leash, we take them out places. Yeah. When they drag us everywhere, we don't take them. We lose the incentive to take them. Yeah.
Yeah. Or perhaps we still want to take them, but other people say, no, you're not coming in here. You're not bringing that dog in here.
Yeah.
No way.
Exactly. Yeah. Good point. I was just thinking about me, but yeah, the third party.
Yeah. So it sort of works both ways as well. You know, that the owner themselves might say, well, I can't handle this dog, so I'm not taking it out. Or they might actually want, well, I'd really like to take my dog out, but yeah, my dog's an absolute nightmare. And it's other people that say, no, we don't actually want you and that dog here. Your dog is problematic. So
absolutely. Yeah.
And I think anything that we can do that helps improve that sort of situation, as well as providing, as you said, providing for the animal, that is actually a part of the animal's daily needs, that they can live within a family, that they can function as part of the family.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to run through some of the benefits of environmental and behavioral enrichment, and then we can just very quickly talk about the different kinds of enrichment. So benefits: alleviate boredom, provide brain exercise, physical exercise, prevent problem behaviors, we've discussed that, interrupt progressive problems that could lead to compulsive problems, an outlet for anxiety, lifelong learning, because training's enrichment. I mean, wow, using positive reinforcement. Oh my goodness, I remember when I got my very first dog back in 2000 and I would take her to puppy class and she would sleep for the rest of the day after a 30-minute puppy class. It was so mentally enriching. And let's not forget the fact that it is just so much fun, and it should be fun for everybody, not just the dog, but also the owner. So there are so many reasons why we should be using enrichment. And we classify enrichment as passive or active. And the two passive enrichments are visual enrichment and auditory. And obviously some things are both. Some things are both of these and cross over into the active enrichment. And then active enrichment, we have five categories. We have food-based, physical, structural or environmental, olfactory and cognitive. So when you think about going back to what we were saying earlier, that different activities for different dogs and that you can rotate them, I think enrichment is like the dog's favorite toy. You don't necessarily want to have it out all the time because it's no longer going to be the favorite toy. So we have, I think you might remember that little leopard bone that Gizmo loves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is about this bone, but every dog that's ever come in contact with that bone has grabbed it and run off with it. And we actually hide it now, and it only comes out when Gizmo's on her own because Doogie doesn't want her to play with it. Doogie wants to play with it. But Rick always says to me, oh, well, she loves it so much. I said, yeah, because you protect it. It only comes out when Doogie and I go for our solo runs and Rick doesn't come. The minute we leave the door, he pulls out that toy and throws it to Gizmo and then spends the next half an hour chasing around the house with it. That is her thing to do. And he says, well, after 12 years, she still loves it. Well, yeah, because it's not in her face all day, every day. It comes out once a day, maybe twice, three times a week. So it's the special one.
Yeah.
So I think it's like enrichment. If you give your dog Kongs five times a day, every day, I'm sure a Kong is soon going to lose its value. Whatever you stuff inside it, you need to look at all the different enrichment activities and then rotate them so that they all still have that really high value for your dog. Yeah.
Definitely. And I think I'm going to touch back on one thing that you mentioned as well. You talked about anxiety. And I do think enrichment is so important. You think about how many dogs have got different problems, that, you know, they could just be feeling a little bit stressed because somebody's going out for half an hour and they're being left alone.
Yeah.
So, you know, what can we do about that? Well, obviously, you know, you've mentioned the auditory enrichment. There are actual studies that I know that we quote that have shown that auditory enrichment in the form of certain styles of music can help with relaxation. We got the visual enrichment that could be going on, which could be that we're bringing things into the dog's area. So it could be like Gizzy's bone that you're bringing in, or it could even be that you're showing, your dog TV. You've literally got your TV pro playing. But all of these things that we can do that may or for a dog that may or may not need more than this. It could just be that this is literally what they need, and it's going to take the edge off, and that dog is going to be able to relax and say, oh, okay, actually, mum going out for half an hour is pretty cool.
Well, I'm really glad you said that, Lou, because when I first got Doogie, one of the things that I was quite concerned about 2.5 years ago is that I was bringing her into the home where we both live and work. So therefore, as a puppy, we were there all the time. And it's somewhat what people were concerned about with COVID, wasn't it? That that these dogs were, that they were being brought into a very artificial environment. So when she was about 4 months old, I would literally pop her in her crate and just go hang out in the garden. And I would sit out there, watch her on a camera, and I would not come back in the house unless she was relaxed. Because the one thing that I always feared, because I think it's such a difficult scenario, is the separation anxiety.
God, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Doogie now runs with me and really enjoys it. Now, I can run anywhere from 5 miles to 15 miles, and I don't ever take her on long runs. That would not be fair, if she would not enjoy it. So I tend to take her if I go between 3 and 5. Now, no more than 3 because of the weather. So the other day I thought, oh, I got to be really careful here, because my very first dog, Dobie, I couldn't leave the house without that dog. I mean, literally, I used to hide my running gear in the back of my car, and I would leave the house and my work stuff, go in my car, get changed, and then go for a run. Because if I put my sneakers on, she would not let me out of the house. I mean, she would whine and cry. And Rick used to say, for God's sake, you can't leave her like this. So with Doogie, I thought, okay, I've got to get really smart about this. I've got to create an environment where whether she comes or whether she doesn't, it's okay. So last night I said to Rick, I said, I'm going to get up really early tomorrow because I've got a meeting with Louise. I'm not going to take Doogie because I'd already checked the weather. It was ridiculously hot. I'll take her out for a nice walk in the afternoon. But in the morning, I've got to get my 6 miles in. It's on my plan. It's got to get done. So I take her out in the morning, I play with her outside, do about 20 minutes, and then I bring her back in the house. In my dressing room, there are 3 snuffle mats on the floor, all fully loaded to go, and a Kong, and I've hidden some cookies. And I have the gate closed. And then I go in the kitchen, drink my coffee, start to drink my water, and she is waiting by the gate. Now, normally, she'd be dancing around my heels because I've got my running stuff on.
Yeah, and instead...
instead, she's waiting by her gate. So 5 minutes before I leave, I open the gate, say, go find, and she goes in there. Now, the thing I love about snuffle mats is, and particularly scent training, once they get engrossed, the bloody house can fall down. They ain't moving. They are on that scent, yeah? So while she's engaged in that scent, I walk out of the house, and there's no muss or fuss. I don't like sneak out. I slam doors and make it really obvious. And then I look at her and she's still sniffing.
Yeah. And doesn't care, basically.
Right. And by the time she's got through those 3 snuffle mats, I'm 2 miles down the road. She's nice and relaxed. Then she picks up the big ginormous Kong. So when I get back, she's crashed out on the floor. And that's what I want. Now, if I just put her in there with a Kong, I think she'd be like this, watching where I am, because she knows that I'm going out. But because the snuffle mat requires an additional level of interaction, she doesn't notice us going. So it's not just about the enrichment, is it? It's about creating an environment where she now knows when those two go for a run, I don't give a toss because I'm in here.
Yeah.
All this really good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that is a big part of it. It's you're meeting her needs and you're doing it in such a way that you're not saying you're never coming for a run. Actually, sometimes you're going to come for a run, but if you don't come for a run, you're also going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Something great's going to happen as well. And touching on, you know, you mentioned the pandemic. I know I've been seeing so many dogs that have got real problems now, and it's because the people were at home the whole time and they're now suddenly not at home. And I think, unfortunately, although you said, you know, we were very aware of this, and I'm sure many trainers and behaviorists were, unfortunately a lot of normal pet owners weren't aware of the effect that this would have on their dogs, whether they be new puppies or older dogs. Mm-hmm. And yet there is so much that we can do once we get the knowledge out there.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be, okay, some things, yeah, absolutely. We need to do a functional assessment. We need a certified behavior consultant to go in there to work with these behaviors. But some of the behaviors really don't need that.
Yeah.
What they actually need is somebody like a canine enrichment technician
right.
to go in and say, okay, well, this is what we can do. And not only that, you're now out at work all day. Well, we can actually implement the program for you. We can come to your house.
I'm so glad you said that.
Once or twice a day.
Right. I'm so glad you said that, because when I was talking to Mary and Michelle the other day, we were talking about equine enrichment. And I said to Michelle, I said, the one thing I love about the enrichment technician role is that you have two choices. You can either go into the home and do an assessment and then teach the client over the next few weeks. So as an example, you could look at all these 32 activities and go, well, you know, I can teach the client 12 of these in the next 4 lessons, and then they can start engaging them into the dog's life. Mm-hmm. Or you can say to the owner, well, if you don't have time or you're not interested, I can come in every day and do a dog, and rather than do a dog walk, do an enrichment visit and expose a dog, or I can come in twice a week or whatever. So it gives you so much flexibility.
Yeah.
But the important thing is that the dog's life is being impacted positively. They're getting enrichment into their life, which is the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is just goal, and that's the goal, but it has all these knock-on effects in helping prevent problematic behaviors and from actually occurring. But also, if they have occurred, it's amazing what, as you said before, what, you know, the management solutions that you put in place can help achieve.
And this is why training is so important, in a way where we are using it to enrich an animal's life. And I'm just going to read something here that's from our program, because I think this is quite important. I think in the wild, animals deal with ecological challenges in order to acquire the resources they need, such as food and shelter, the things they need to survive. The challenges that they have to meet arise from interactions from other animals, changes in the environment, weather, exercise, all different things. So they have to improve their behavioral strategies. So when animals are living in the wild, these challenges act as important problem-solving elements in their day-to-day life. Now, think about pet dogs. Think about our pet dogs that are domesticated and captive. They don't really have those challenges. They don't have to figure out where the next meal is coming from. They don't have to figure out how they're going to get from A to B and survive, because on the way they might pass by a hunter. They don't have to figure out how to get across a river or how to find fresh water. So just by them being captive, we have reduced and sort of scaled back all their need for problem solving. So they've got this amazing brain with all these amazing scents. And then we put them into these very sterilized environments where they don't have to use them. Just think about how not just boring, but how potentially devastating that can be for an animal.
Yeah.
And especially, and I reference little dogs, because little dogs, I mean, any dog really, a dog that's a yard dog, a dog that's on a chain, a dog that's in a kennel, any dog that is not having a sort of normal active life. But with some of the little dogs, when we first moved here, our neighbor, we live on 3 acres, our neighbor behind us suddenly turned up at our front door with a chihuahua in his hand, in his arms. And I looked out of the window and went, well, who the heck's that? Because we don't know anybody. And Rick went down there and he was saying, oh, welcome to the neighborhood. And he introduced Rick to the dog and he said, oh, you won't ever see the dog. She never comes out. I don't know why he brought her, actually. And I thought, that's so sad. It's so sad, because some of these little dogs live in apartments or live in homes. Some of them don't even get to go on grass. They don't even really get to go outside. I mean, and little dogs and people go, well, they don't need exercise. Well, they do need exercise. Absolutely they do. But they also need exposure to all the stimuli that is outside. So,
yeah, that'd be a bit the same as saying, well, little humans don't need to go outside.
Right.
Because because yeah. I'm not as tall as somebody else. I yeah. It's okay. She can stay
yeah.
in there.
Yeah, yeah. So I need enrichment because I'm 5'7". You're 5'3" or something, probably even smaller than that. So you can just stay in your house. You're fine in your house.
Yeah, you don't need to go out. And it is that, absolutely. People say to me, same sort of thing, well, little dog, big dog. And I'm like, they're dogs, yeah? We've got different breeds of dogs. We've got different sizes of dogs. We've got different ages of dogs. We've got individuals within breeds. All of them will have their own needs, but they've all got some needs that spread across the entire species. It's like humans have certain needs. I might have other needs and preferences that are slightly different to yours, but we have certain needs in general that they're going to need to be met, whatever our circumstances. So absolutely, totally agree. I think it's probably slightly different depending on the country that you're in. I'm going to say probably don't see as many dogs that are kept inside. A lot are kept inside during the day while owners perhaps out at work, but then they're actually let out in the evening. So the dogs are wandering around, which is a slightly different environment, but that's because of where I live, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think depending on whether people are in the city, the countryside, etc., you're also, it did make me smile initially when you said that your neighbor came over with his little dog. I thought, oh, great that he was bringing his dog out. And then when you said, but the dog never comes out again. No. Oh, no. It's super sad.
I want to tie this back in as well to the welfare of animals, because the five freedoms that came out back in the 60s say that animals should be free from hunger or thirst, free from discomfort, free from pain, injury or disease, free to express normal behaviours, and freedom from fear. Now, there was a gentleman called Favre in 2011 who deals a lot with animal cruelty, and he fleshed these out and actually added to them. And he says...
Yeah.
He developed his own pondering, so to speak, and that the rights of pets are all of those plus a few others, but to have living space. But at Dognostics, we actually fleshed that out even further, because we said, well, it's not enough for us that animals have living space. They should be provided with adequate space to ensure sufficient and appropriate physical and mental enrichment. So it's not okay, in our opinion, to have a dog living in a kennel outside, even though it might be free from pain, free from blah, 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 because that really isn't an environment where that animal can express its normal species typical behaviors.
Yeah.
So therefore, that's not okay. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, no, totally agree. And I'm sure, everybody listening probably does as well. I think it's good to make people think about these things. It's one of those things I think that we don't talk about enough. It's like you say, people talk about, have you fed the dog? Have you walked the dog?
Mm-hmm.
And have you taken the dog to the vets?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, the dog's good.
Yeah.
Well, the dog's not necessarily good, because you might have fed me and you might have given me some water, and you might have taken me to the doctors to make sure I'm okay. But if that's it, if I'm still just what am I doing? Absolutely. No, I think we cannot underestimate the importance of enrichment activities and of everything that comes into that. Let's see, another example. We talked about the auditory enrichment. Oh, I was going to say to you, actually, going back to the auditory enrichment, everybody always used to say that classical music was the one with these studies. And I did read something a while back, it's going back probably about 2018, that they'd done some studies, and soft rock was coming up with the thumbs up. I've just read a slightly more recent study, and what they've actually said, and I know we've got some of this information in the course, but combination is best. We all get bored if we just listen to the same thing all of the time. So it's the same as doing the same thing all the time. And what they found was that whether it was classical music or any other style of music, that habituation basically occurs. And so introducing a little bit of variability was good. But the music that actually the dogs, let me think about this, for problematic barking, the music that worked best was the soft rock. And what they said was the dogs didn't bark any less, whether it was soft rock or classical or during the music. But when the music was off, the ones that had been listening to the soft rock were less likely to bark.
I'm listening cool going, this rings a big bell. Yeah, absolutely.
How cool is that?
Afterwards,
but it all ties back in. Yeah. I know that I'm sort of talking again, I'm bringing in problem behaviours, but the variety, the variability of what you're providing.
Right.
Because, you know, otherwise, the dog absolutely or the human will habituate. And we all, I know we all get into our routines and it can be difficult sometimes to break out of our routines. But even what I'm going to say to people is, even if it's just that you say, okay, one new thing a week, I'm going to do one new thing a week with my dog.
Yeah.
And then if you can up it a little bit to, okay, well, that was cool. Now maybe I can do two new things a week. And when a canine enrichment technician goes into my household, I think they've got to bear that in mind, that some people will be up for lots of change and some people won't be up for quite as much change, but that's where all the intake forms come in.
And you do it slowly.
Yeah, and gradually make those changes because, you know, some of us are sort of up for change and others are, you know, it's like you with me, like, come on, Louise, let's do this. And I'm like, really? Do I have to? And you're like, And it's good. It's good.
Well, you know, I mean, having studied, I spent last year, you know, I did that transformation specialist program. And one of the things, and I'm game for anything. I mean, I love change. And but there's an evolutionary reason for why we don't just want to jump into change. Because back in the day, those of us like me that were just going, oh yeah, let's no longer use spears. Let's just go out with a bat, would have been eaten by a woolly mammoth. And those that resisted change would have probably been back at the fireplace going, no, I don't want to go. You guys go ahead. They would have survived. Having one foot in the status quo and then just having a little bit of a foot in the change is good to vacillate and go, oh, is this really necessary? Because humans do not deal with change well. I mean, we don't, and we have to be managed through it slowly. So even when we instigate the change and we have the best of intentions, what we plan to do and what we actually do are often very, very different things. So if you are going into a home and you're working with a client, don't think that you can just pull out 32 exercises and say, well, there's your enrichment calendar, off you go. Because whatever you're recommended is going to have an implication to the owner in terms of them having to change their behavior. It would be far better, like Louise says, to say, okay, why don't we for the next week just do a surface circus each day and see how that goes. And maybe the first one only has 5 items and the second one 7. And like developing any new behavior, we build up on the criteria, don't we? And we build up a reinforcement history and then we strengthen it and we get better and better and better. And it's exactly the same with our clients. We have to do the same thing with our clients.
Definitely. Because if you think about it, if somebody came into your house, even though you like change, if I came into your house, I could absolutely overwhelm you by going, okay, well, I'm going to implement an enrichment program for you, Nikki, and here are your 30 exercises that you're going. You'd be like, what? Yeah. And you would probably not do any of them.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be that you sort of went, oh my God, that's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. You'd probably just be absolutely
what clients do in that situation and give you a whole bunch of lip service and go, oh, thank you so much. And then the minute you leave, I'm going to go, this ain't happening.
Yeah. And that's it. That's then the, you know, you're not continuing with the service and you've not actually helped anybody. So sometimes, you know, slowly is actually the way to go.
Well,
implement the changes so that you get the behavior change.
Absolutely. And the other way to go would also be to go in there and say, look, having done the assessment, let's talk about the different types of enrichment. And today we'll just focus on a couple of active. Let me give you a brief on what those are. And then let's talk about what you think is best for you. So after having provided that education, the client can then make an empowered decision. The decision's on them. They can say, okay, based on what you've told me, I think what I'd like to do is try this one.
Yeah.
so that we're not forcing change on clients, we're guiding them through a discovery process where they come to the realization that, yes, I called you because I want to impact my dog's life. I want to benefit my dog's life. You're now making recommendations. You're helping the client uncover the ambivalence between what they want and what they're actually prepared to do. And the minute a client says, yes, I think this is what I would like to try first. Talk to me about that. Let me do that first. You now have a client that is using change language. And when the client starts to use change language, you know you are going to get results. If you go in there and try and force it on them, the language you're going to get from your clients is, well, but, not sure. That is not positive change language. That is resistance language. And while you're getting resistance language, you are not implementing change. So this is a whole other topic that we could probably do another session on.
But absolutely. And I think if that was the case, I think the only thing that you could do is, you know, if the client was really resistant, no matter what you were speaking about, is make that suggestion that we mentioned before. Okay, well, we can actually provide the service that I can come in and I can do this service for you. Because I think that does sometimes happen as well, that, you know, the client's like, well, I really don't know, but I haven't got the time to do any of it. I want to do something for the dog, but I've not got the time. So and I think, you know, bringing it back around, just absolutely not.
Too often I see our professionals judging clients because they don't want to be involved. Let's not judge our clients. Let's work with them to enhance the lives of pets. And if that means that client doesn't want to be involved, they want to just throw money at it, that is fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you know what? It's a bit like saying, well, because you've got a child, you've got to look after that child, you know, all day long. Yeah. You cannot send the child off to school, or you cannot have a nanny in the home, or a childminder. Of course you can. You know, your child can go on play dates, etc. And I think it's the same. Again, it comes back to that variability.
Absolutely. I think it's the same with any personal service. So when I hear people saying, well, I think the client should be involved in training the dog, and then I say, well, do you have a cleaner? Yes. Do you have a pool cleaner? Yes. Do you do your own lawns? No, I have a landscaper. Well, that's because they are your priorities, and you look at your time and your financial situation and you say, these are the things I don't want to do. I'm going to outsource them and pay somebody else to do it. There's nothing wrong with a pet owner doing the same thing, because maybe they do that, clean their own pool and their own house and do their own yard. And maybe this is the one thing that they want to outsource. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, I think we've covered quite a lot about enrichment today. So thank you for joining me. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and we will be back on Facebook pretty time soon.
Hopefully so.
'Dognostics is a career center, and it's a complete pet professional resource offering you a selection of dog training and behavior certificates, diplomas, individual certification courses, and lots of other tools and resources to help support your professional development. Why choose Dognostics? Well, we are certified people trainers and teachers. We are all highly experienced pet business owners and pet professionals with a wide array of experience and credentials. And third, we are so passionate about the future of our industry and the development of those who practice within it. And lastly, we all love what we do, helping others to achieve their individual goals.